You're listening to the Camp Nation podcast. Find us online at campnation.ca.
Welcome to the Camp Nation podcast number 10, the one with our most expensive pick of the week ever. Today's episode features our discussion on communicating with parents during the summer. Thank you for listening. Good day and welcome to Camp Nation number 10 for the first week of May 2010. My name is Travis Allison, and I'm the social media manager at Our Kids Media, and I was a camp director for 15 years at Glenmore Camp and Cairn in Muskoka, Ontario.
Hi, this is Dan Weir from Frost Valley YMCA, and Frost Valley is a year-round camping conferencing facility up in the Catskill Mountains of New York.
Hi, this is Gabe Chernoff from Birch Trail Camp, and we're an all-girls traditional residential camp in northern Wisconsin.
And I'm Joe Richards from Pierce Williams Christian Center, a United Church of Canada camp in southwestern Ontario, just half an hour outside of London, Ontario.
Cool. Welcome, everybody. Since Gabe's our guest, thanks. Since Gabe is our guest, I wanted to just take a minute and let him sort of go into a bit more detail. So, Gabe, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Travis. I appreciate being here with you guys. I grew up at camp. I'm a second-generation camp director, and my parents ran the camp that I now run before me. So I'm sort of the second-generation owner and director of our camp. We're pretty much a traditional residential all-girls camp. We're a private independent camp with a heavy emphasis on wilderness trips. So each one of our kids goes on at least a three-day trip, and they have the option to spend really the entire summer out of camp. And our longest trips are about 3 weeks, and we do mountain biking, canoeing, sailing, sea kayaking, rock climbing, and hiking trips. And I also run somemorecamp.com, which is a social networking site completely dedicated to camps, where the camps can have their own profile, campers can have their profile, and the kids and staff can sort of communicate after camp is over in an environment where the parents, the counselors, the camp director can all oversee everything and make sure everything is safe.
Very cool. So how long has Smart Camp been going?
We've been going now for about 4 years, and we've got about 350 camps that use the site. It's a free site to everybody, free to camps, free to campers, free to staff. The site's pretty much generated by affiliate marketing, so mm-hmm. We have things like songbooks on the site. So if your camp had certain songs that you liked, you could create a songbook. You could then listen to your songbook. Your campers could listen to your songbook, and then if you wanted, you could purchase a song, and that's where we generate our revenue.
Very cool. Yeah, we're really glad to have you, Gabe.
Thanks very much for having me.
That's great. We got Gabe involved because he knows Gab, and we're sad to report that Gab can't join us today. Got a phone call from her office, and she won't be here, so we'll miss you, Gab. I want to start us off today with our links. So links for us are some news about the camping and recreation industry. And Dan, I want to start with you.
Okay. So my link was from Mashable, which is a really – we've talked about it a lot, but Mashable.com is a social media guide, and it's definitely – unfiltered, it's a lot of articles, but every day there's at least a gem that pops up. And so one that popped up a few days ago was 10 do's and don'ts for brands on Twitter. And I love this article because it's a top 10 list, and it really kind of makes things easy for people to understand. A lot of people are diving into Twitter. Really, they have a grasp on it, but they don't have a kind of guidelines to go by. And this is really nice. I was talking to my development director the other day, and she was just going on about, like, you know, there's no rules with Twitter, you know, what can we do with it, and all this sort of thing. And so really spelling these out really made it nicely. So for instance, one was don't be a show off, and I definitely find a lot of camps and a lot of people that are on there just constantly kind of doing that self-promotion and talking about how great they are in that sense. And it's really kind of important to make sure that you're being humble and giving back to a community as well too. And just, you know, making sure you don't overtweet and monitoring keywords of local areas. For instance, for us, with since we're in the middle of the Catskills, like I'll search Catskills for Frost Valley's Twitter and then just reply back to people that are in the area. And I definitely pick up a lot of great conversations that way. But it's just, it's just a nice list for people to go by.
That's cool. I read the article as well, and I think there's some great stuff in there. Good stuff for people who people like us trying to explain Twitter to, like in your case, somebody higher up, Dan.
Yeah.
Right on. I'll go next because I also have a Mashable article. Last week, I took some time in the afternoon and watched the keynote presentation from the F8 conference, which is Facebook's developers conference. And as I'm sure lots of people have heard, certainly by the time this gets released, Facebook made some huge changes last week that I titled this in our notes here, Facebook Takes Over the World. And I think that the stuff that they're offering is going to make, it's just going to be so integrated throughout the web that you're going to have Facebook anywhere you go. And I think that camps, like the stuff I'm considering for Camp Nation, I think camps are going to want to be integrated as best possible with Facebook and have the like button and the social graph toolbar on their sites. But I think it's also going to give us even more responsibility for teaching our kids and our staff how to set the privacy stuff for Facebook and when you're going to want to be letting Facebook know where you are online.
Yeah, it was amazing to kind of see the effect that that presentation had on what people were building. Definitely with, they talked about getting rid of Facebook Connect as well too, possibly in the future. And yeah, this article really spells out nicely.
Some of the implications are maybe harder to understand at first, but I was thinking if you have like a staff computer that is like a common computer for staff to use on a day off for email or whatever, and somebody's signed into Facebook and then they leave and don't sign themselves out of Facebook, then somebody else on staff goes and visits a website that is inappropriate to camp, whether it's, who knows, nudie pictures or whatever. It'll then have a record that you were there at that site if it has that installed. So there's things like that that are implications in terms of, again, about privacy.
Yeah.
Gabe, did you have any news that you brought, or was it just your pick for later on in the show?
It was just my pick. Okay. I'm sure I could come up with some news on the spot, but...
No, that's great. We'll save that for your pick. And I think we got Joe back.
That's great. I have... This actually came from you, Travis. I'd seen the book and had never read anything out of the book, but it's a link to an article called 5 Tips for Making Ideas Happen, and it comes from a book called... What is the name of that book? Making Ideas Happen, Overcoming the Obstacles Between Vision and Reality. And we're at a spot at camp here where we really have this great vision that is going to move forward. And so these ideas are just a great sort of insight into that book. And I guess my tool would be, or that this would be something that all camps could use in helping with camp staff and moving forward from there. It might be a great sort of cross use of a new book for, you know, for staff training ideas and whatnot as well.
Yeah, and this is the book from the Behance Network, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I heard the author interviewed on a podcast just this morning when I was driving in, so I was so glad you picked it. It was, the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. And so he talked about all that stuff, about what you need to do to sort of get things moving. Yeah, cool. I'm glad you put that there.
It's great to move forward. So.
Mm-hmm. And he specifically talked about creative people, which I sort of feel creative people are our people. It's such a community of people interested in expressing themselves and all that, and it's great tools for going from the fun ideas into bringing stuff to completion. And his example on the podcast today was so me. It was, you get excited about an idea, you're just thrilled to get started, and you just, you know, plunk in and get going and get into the middle of it, and then you get to the tough stuff and you're trying to finish it, and then your next idea pops up and you sort of float to the next idea. Like, ooh, what's that? That's new.
I think you just described every work process for me.
Yeah.
Travis, I just wanted to go back for a second because the call did drop while you were discussing the Facebook article. And it's funny that the top 6 today down beside the article, the number one is an article labeled, also on Mashable, called Nobody Can Stop Facebook Because Nobody Understands Facebook. And I'd heard some tech blogs talking about how difficult it is to set these privacy settings in Facebook. And, you know, it's not like you could explain it to your mom how she needs to protect herself when she's on Facebook. It's just a confusing, and so it's going to be a lot of work to make sure that we teach our staff at camp on a shared computer, A, what they need to do and how they can work around it. So
There was even a new one that came over the weekend, and how I found about it was somebody posted as their status of how to turn it off. I can't remember even what the name of it was, but I know I turned it off. I went to Facebook and my account settings and figured it out. But
yeah, and it's the perennial Facebook problem, which is the default settings for Facebook are wide open. And when I first started on Facebook, the default settings were totally closed. And I sort of dislike, I understand why from their business, but in terms of us thinking about teen campers and our staff, it's so frustrating that it's the opposite way.
Yeah, definitely. When I worked for the internet advertising firm, like, that was definitely a shift. That's actually when I kind of knew I had to leave the firm, is when they stopped going from protecting our users to instead, making it easier for businesses to get the information. And it definitely was bring up some moral conflicts for myself.
You know, definitely as a camp director, you kind of feel like David in the David and Goliath story, because it seems like everything is somewhat working against you and trying to protect, you know, our campers. And a site like Facebook, which so many of them use every day, it is exactly that perfect example, where we're trying to protect them and teach them how to protect themselves, and Facebook almost seems like it's working against us.
Oh, this is the one that I found the setting that I had to change. It was instant personalization pilot program, and it was control how select partners can personalize their features with my public information when I arrive on their website. Right. And so there's a setting where you can unclick it, but basically it was going to be using my Facebook data when I went to Yelp or Pandora or whatever.
And another Facebook setting that I think, and I don't quite understand how it fits in with this new stuff, and, you know, like that stuff you're talking about, Dan, but I should do more work, but I've done some work on creating lists within Facebook and then sort of giving each list different levels of permission. So I don't mind if my friends, if I know what my friends have looked at on CNN, like that's pretty cool, but I don't need campers of mine from 5 years ago finding out what I'm reading in Google Reader. So if there's a way to segment it, I hope that's built in. In the end, Gabe, sounds more like a pitch for SmoreCamp than anything else.
You know, it really has. Facebook has been a good business model for us. So I have to thank them for that.
Yeah. Good. Well, thank you for your links, everybody. We're going to move ourselves into our discussion, and this was a topic that Gab had suggested, and I was hoping she'd introduce it, but I hope I can do it justice. We wanted to spend some time today and talk about keeping your parents involved. At least this is what I understand that she put from what she posted in her ideas, about keeping your parents involved throughout the summer. So how to communicate with them while their kids are at camp, or while other kids are at camp and they're sort of, you know, anticipating their child's visit to camp. And I wonder, this is probably also a good day to have you on for this, Gabe. So I wonder what you're doing at your camps for that sort of thing, to make sure that parents feel involved during the summer.
Well, you know, it's a very interesting topic, and I'm glad I'm on for this one. I did a session at the last ACA conference about this, and it seemed like people could have talked for hours and hours just on this topic. In my personal opinion, you know, if you're not communicating with your parents during the summer, you're really losing a captive audience. And we all believe in camps, and we all believe in our message. And not so much to propagandize, but to get that message across to the parents during the summer, it's like we've got a free audience. And so I try to be very aware of that and not take advantage of it. In the past, we've sent weekly emails to the parents, and this year we're going to do daily blogs. And we've debated Twitter, but I don't know if that's hitting them too much. Our parents do get pictures of the kids every day. But as far as communication, I don't want to overwhelm them, but at the same time, I want to take advantage of that opportunity.
I think another key aspect to it, too, is whatever communication you decide to go with, is making sure you can actually deliver on it. Nothing's worse than saying you're going to deliver pictures every day and you're not able to. And then the parent thinks automatically something's going wrong, and where if you're, you know, sticking to a schedule that's a little more sporadic but meets your time frame, it's better for the parent in the long run.
That was my concern with Twitter, is that if a parent had called the office and was told that I wasn't available to talk, but then 10 seconds later I posted a Twitter update, I'm not sure how that parent would feel. So,
oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. You know, one thing that we're doing, and hopefully my parents aren't listening, but is that we're actually coming up with things in advance. So I've created a whole slew of different topics of things that I know are going to happen this summer that happen on a daily basis at camp, from a camp disruption between a cabin arguing about a sweatshirt to a beautiful day outside in a cabin that just returned from a wonderful canoeing trip. And then I'll have these canned responses and sort of pre-written blog entries. So if it is a busy day at camp, I can tie in something that happened to one of my, soapbox speeches, so to speak. And that way you can kind of manage that expectation. If I say I'm going to post a blog update 4 days a week, I know that I've got enough material to do that with.
Yeah.
Cool. Joe, what do you do for your parents through the season?
Well, for us, it's a bit different in the sense that we campers, the longest camp we run is Sunday night through Friday. We don't post pictures. We have a blog that gets updated sporadically, but our leadership team isn't always on top of their section of the blog because they're busy doing camp. And then parents come on Friday and get their kids. So it's funny, with the concept of the iPhone, that you can do everything from somewhere else. You don't need to be sitting behind your desk. You could certainly move towards, I could see Twitter updates and things of that nature coming. And the concern that Gabe has, where a parent, can I talk to Joe? No. And then 2 minutes later, I'm Twittering about something. Part of that would be leaving it by not using your personal account, right? Setting up a parent's Twitter account that they could follow if they so chose, but it's not anybody's personal account. So they would never know who was tweeting about what, right? It could be a series of camp people who would do that. Our leadership team starts next week, and this is something we're going to discuss right away. What's the expectations? Can we get more photos up online? But at this point, we don't do a lot to talk to them besides Sunday nights and Fridays. So twice a week, we chat with them personally.
Right. So once the staff gets there, Joe, you're going to examine whether or not you're going to put out a bit more content for the season?
Yeah, because they need to commit to that, right? You don't want to have them... we don't want to say to parents that we're going to do something and then not do it. So the cardinal rule is, right, under promise and over deliver. So if we say to parents, we'll be posting photos once a week and we actually get them up once a day, then parents can be nothing but happy. But if we say to parents, we're going to post, I'm going to blog 4 times a week and then I miss one time and some parent loses it on me because I missed one post, I'm not sure what the mm-hmm. You have to have a buy-in, because I really think that rather than hearing from just me as the overall camp person, it's great to hear from other leadership team members as well.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Some camps in our area have come up with some interesting schemes where they'll have a contest for their staff and get the 10 best proposals for a blog post and then have the staff write those. So it kind of piggybacks on what he was just saying, that it helps to spread it out. And that way, if not just the camp director is writing the blog post, but if there's a different staff member writing it every day, you can get a ton of content, but you don't have to do all the work on your own.
Well, and that's a great point, and there's tons of tools. So in a previous Camp Nation, I talked about the Flavors Me website, where you could aggregate all of your stuff into one place. So your Twitter feed, your pictures, and your videos and your blogs. And so at that point, I set up a whole Pierce Williams Flavors Me page that we could direct parents to say, here is where you follow what's going on at camp on a daily basis, and that way they can get it all in one place rather, and you can tie that to your own website as well. So that way, if you use a service like Posterous, right, you can just have staff emailing their blog posts to Posterous from an approved email address, and you never have to worry about it. You have to trust that they write stuff that you would approve.
Dan, what do you do at Frost Valley?
We do a few things. With emailing specifically, we send monthly emails gearing up towards the summer. And then when their child's here, I'll email parents within 24 to 48 hours. Just a little like, the weather's doing great, your child's doing really well, we just uploaded our first round of cabin photos. Please take a look. If you need anything, let us know. That I find getting that email out the sooner the better. Mm-hmm. especially just kind of eases that nervous parent, you know, wondering how that first night at camp went. We also blog daily. And so I actually have my blog statistics up. And so the first summer we blogged was 2008. And in the month of July, we had 11,000 views in 1 month. And this past year, in July, in 2009, we had 25,000 views. And the way the statistics are going, I wouldn't be surprised if we come close to not doubling, but definitely doing significant more statistics this month. And so we really put it on our director team to that at least one person's blogging a day and just kind of grabbing new content. But I actually just bought a new WordPress book, and so I'm going to be looking into possibly getting in more program staff and letting them blog. And as long as it goes to one of our approvals, we read it over and make sure it's content we want up. But we really find doing those two combinations works out well. And then pictures, we actually used to do photos every day, and we never kept up with it. And we just get railed from parents all the time about it. You know, like, you know, I'm paying for this service, you know, I'm expecting all this sort of thing. So what we actually did was we made sure the parents knew the photos were free, because they've always been free. Yep. This year we really kind of campaigned the fact that, you know, this is free photos. And then we also told them that we're going back to just doing 80 photos every other day, and we actually delivered on those goals, and parents were much happier with the overall service. We also switched to Smug Mug, which has been great for parents ordering prints and getting the kind of quality photos they want out of it, as well as being able to see on the mobile device. So doing that combination of those three works out really well. We didn't really tweet last summer. We didn't do too many Facebook updates. Probably what we'll be doing is just updating on Facebook when we do a blog post, you know, kind of reverting back to the blog. But other than that, we've been pretty solid, and we're pretty happy with our communication last summer.
Cool. So, Joe, when you post photos, where are you posting them?
Well, currently I have if I was to post photos, because we don't photos. If I were to, it's currently set up that it would be tied to a Flickr account, because that was available. I believe SmugMug is available for Flavors mm-hmm. Me as well. Something that I can upload from my iPhone. And I've actually searched around trying to find an unlocked an iPhone 3GS that was for sale, because I wouldn't need to actually have a SIM card in it to use the photos, right, to use the camera, the video, all of that, and then I could just attach it to Wi-Fi and have it uploading stuff that right. way. But it seems to be a really expensive device that could walk away really easily from camp.
Oh, definitely.
You know, unless you drill a hole through one corner and put a really, really big ball attached to it so that nobody can take it, but... Yeah, the key is that, you know, we have our website is set up as a Joomla site, and there's lots of extensions that could make it, you know, could do the photos and multiple authors and all of those things. I'm still not sold on the need yet in my very specific area, and we're much different than lots of camps in that we have a very defined area of where our kids come from. Nothing against the local area, but they're not extremely tech savvy. So we'll see how that goes.
Gabe, do you post pictures?
We do. We post about 200 a day. We use a site called Image Event, and we actually have a separate photographer. And her whole job is as a photographer and a videographer to take the video for our reunion videos and post pictures on a daily basis. Our kids, however, are with us for about 4 or 8 weeks at a time, and we're a very geographically diverse camp where we actually limit our enrollment in every age group to 20% of a certain city. So in a typical cabin of 8 kids, we'll have 8 different states represented, and some kids coming from as far as Singapore and Dubai. So for our kids, especially the international ones, you know, the pictures are really important to the parents. That being said, there are camps in our area that don't do pictures, and that would seem fantastic to me. We have probably 95% of our parents who are fantastic and love the photos, and the 5% take up 90% of the time when they call and say, my daughter's smiling in picture 37, but in picture 82, she's not smiling as much. What's the problem?
I've got a pretty funny story about one of those. I got, it was like 2 years ago, and a parent called me, and She was completely irate that we would discipline her child in such a way where we yell and scream at them and belittle them. And I was like, ma'am, where are you getting this from? You know, I don't, you know, this is definitely not the attitude that my staff have, and certainly not what we train our staff to do. Like, you know, where'd you hear this? And she's like, well, I saw it with my own eyes. I saw it on a picture. And so she sent me to the picture that she saw it on. And in the picture, the person that is the staff member is talking to the child is pointing with a finger, but they're sitting at the lunch table, and the staff member's face is red, and you know, is right across from the child. So I print the photo out. I go up to the camper first. I pull him aside. I'm like, hey, you know, like, just so you know, like, you know, we saw this photo and we were concerned. You want to make sure everything's okay with your relationship with your counselor and all sort of things. Like, oh yeah, you know, he was totally fine. He was just telling me a story. That's how he talks. And so then I pulled the staff member aside and was like, so I got a phone call from a parent. She thought, you know, you were lecturing her child or yelling at her child from your body motions here. Do you mind to kind of explain? He's like, no. He's like, you know, this is how I talk. I'm just animated. And it was a hot day. Like, I got a red face because I didn't put enough sunblock on and all this sort of thing. And he was, you know, he was also very upset that, you know, we're kind of questioning his judgment.
Yeah, of course.
In that sense. And I was like, no, I have your back. I'm like, don't worry. I totally support you. I just want to make sure I get the full story before I go back to the parent. And so I went back to the parent, explained everything to them, and they were definitely ashamed of the accusations they were making at that point. You know, just kind of after talking out of the exact methods we do during training and how their child is having a great time and all that sort of thing. It was funny for me for her to automatically trust that photo 10 times more than anything was coming out of my mouth.
Right.
You know, like, no matter how much I tried to explain how we do things at first, you know, without having that specific picture printed out and shown to her child, was pretty
amazing. I think you're right, Dan. It's amazing how much parents will trust those photos, and it works both ways. We have, I think, much less homesick phone calls now than we used to, because if the parents see a picture of their daughter and she's smiling and she's with a bunch of friends, they're happy.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yep.
It's amazing. I also have one child who, you know, like with the pictures who. What mom called, you know, child wasn't in any photo. And so I went to the child to take a picture of him. And I was like, your mom, just so you know, your mom called, like, you got to get in some more of these photos, you know? And he's like, well, that's my thing. I don't like pictures being taken of me. Like, that's it. Like, I just don't like it. My mom knows this. And so I negotiated it and eventually had all of his friends covering his face. And so I got a picture of all of his friends, like, smiling and covering his face with, you know, like, hands covered over there. And I emailed it back to mom. I was like, just so you know, like, he says, you know, he doesn't like photos being taken. And her reply was, oh, that's my son. You know, like, so I'm like, oh, okay, that would have been great to know, you know, a few hours ago when we were talking on the phone and you were ripping me apart. So
we have some families who make contracts with their kids about how many pictures the kids need to get in.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Joe, go ahead.
Sorry, it just seems to me like a photo can be, you know, they say a photo's worth 1,000 words. But apparently with parents, a photo can be worth 1,000 misinterpreted words.
Yes. Well, one last anecdote. I had one from this past summer. I was going around taking pictures, making sure that, you know, every once in a while, I always have a camera with me, but every once in a while, I'll make sure, like, if somebody's really low on photos, and just to support the staff, I'll take photos as well, too, and upload them. And so I was taking pictures of the 10-year-old boys. And I took a picture, and this all of a sudden this 10-year-old boy comes right up to me. He's like, you didn't just take a photo of me, did you? I was like, yeah, I'm going to put on – he's like, are you going to put on a website? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to put on a website where your parents can see it. And he's like, you got to delete that one. You got to take another one. I was like, why? He's like, well, I was reading in that photo, and I promised my parents that I would not read while I was at camp, that I would make friends while I was at camp. And if I don't do this, they're going to take away my Wii. So can you please please take another photo? And so I was like, oh, you know, then I started, you know, hassling them a little bit, but I ended up deleting it and taking another photo. But it was just really funny to kind of see the that relationship built into there.
Right.
We post cabin photos the first night of camp, so our kids will get there and the cabin photos go up. And what we've realized over the years is that in the beginning, the kids would come up with these amazing CIA-type intricate signals that they would give to their parents, where if they had one earring in their right ear, it meant they weren't happy with their cabin placements and called to talk about Susie. And if they were wearing three earrings in their left ear, their cabin was good, but they didn't like their counselors. And so we've now taken to kind of making all the kids we make them have a smile, we make them give the thumbs up so that they can't be doing anything different with their hands, whether they're pulling at a shirt or something like that. But it was amazing the signals they would come up with to signal their parents.
Yeah.
Okay, but can we just talk about the fact that do you think that your parents, if they sent you away to camp, you know, that's just a totally different parent style. My parents literally dropped five kids off on a Sunday night and walked away. Yep. You know, they could care less. And they did it out of love. They did it out of love, people.
Yes.
It's just, you know, what does that say about parenting that they're saying, okay, so when you get to camp, tug twice on your earlobe and stick your finger up your nose, and then I'll know you're having a bad time.
Well, it's amazing. You bring up a fantastic point in this kind of a conversation, Joe, that, you know, we always talk about building resiliency in our kids, but we don't talk about it enough with our parents. Right. And how much communication is too much with our parents? And at what point do we need to say to the parents, your kid's at camp, you chose this camp, let us do our job. You know, obviously we'll call you if there's anything wrong, but in the meantime, just let us do our thing. And it's a hard line to cross.
I find the prompt of the response, though, really eases the parents down. For when I first started being a camp director, I was definitely naive and like, I was like, oh, I'll get to it later. I could do it tomorrow morning. But I've really found that the quicker I am with the response, the more at ease they are. To them, it's like their test of making sure I'm on top of my game in that sense.
Well, and I wondered, Dan, about you saying that you email parents after a day. Do they expect, are they expecting that email? Or is that, I mean, if they haven't been there before, would they know to expect that email?
I don't think so, but I imagine, you know, if they're here long enough, they definitely will kind of grow to expect it. You know, one of the things we just realize is that it's better for it to come from us first than for them to, you know, be a few days out, already have that built up anxiety of whether or not they should actually call us, then actually call, then not get us right away because, you know, we're out and about and someone else is answering the phone for us. Right. And then finally get a call back a few hours later. You know, it's better for us to kind of get that email out the door to them, us to make that first step than for them to make that first step.
Right. I just didn't know if it was some parents that I remember getting an email from camp would be before they started to read it, would seeing that there was an email from me would give them anxiety. It's sort of like us teaching the staff at the start. If you ever have to phone a parent for anything, health card number, whatever, you must always open with, let me start by saying your child is fine.
That's actually the beginning of the email.
Okay.
That's really kind of the start of the email in that sense.
One of the things we haven't covered is what do you do if a parent doesn't have email?
Right.
Like we all deal with families to some degree who come from lower economic status.
Yeah.
And we, you know, our camp management software has a built-in report, you know, parents without email, mailing list labels. And so part of this is great that we say we can do these things to stay in touch with parents, but what if they can't do it from the other end? And how would we deal with that?
Right.
A lot of that's just phone
same
communication.
Same way my parents dealt with it.
Yeah. Ship them away.
Ship them away. Get rid of them.
So my family's really spread out. I'm 28, and my youngest sister is 12. So my mom has actually sent a number of kids to camp in between that time period. And my mom was definitely, you know, with myself and my younger brother, was definitely ship them away. But now I get, you know, as a camp director, I get my mom hassling me for camp photos. So, like, it's one of those things where it's interesting, you know, it might not necessarily be the parenting style. I don't think her style has changed that much. Or between, you know, it being a boy or a girl, but more just, you know, keeping up with technology with everything else. Everybody else is uploading photos. If it's, you know, the school or sports teams or, you know, the news, you know, whatever, everybody else is doing it. Such media. Why isn't the camp doing it?
Well, I think that's a good wrap up to it, to that discussion. I think we'll leave it there. So for those who are listening to this podcast, you can go to the show notes for today's show at campnation.ca and just leave your comments. Let us know what you do at your camp to keep parents involved while their children are at camp. So that moves us into the last section today, which is our pick of the week. And our pick is a tool that you could use as a camp director. And let me stop myself right there. I got an email from somebody this week, which I think Dan and Joe actually got copied on, that someone was saying, you know, make sure this is still open to those of us who work at camp but aren't camp directors. And I'm sorry, I keep using the language of a camp director when in my head I'm picturing people that work at camp year-round. that are not no longer students, but are involved in this industry as a profession. So sorry if I keep limiting it, but picks of the week are a tool that will make you a better camp person, better camp. Dan, why don't you start us off with your pick, please?
Sure. So my pick for the week was Lisa Loeb's CD. It came out last year called Camp Lisa. And it's basically just a CD of 19 camp songs. She has kids singing in the background as well, too. Something I'm never really proud to admit is that I'm horrible at leading camp songs. And it's not because I'm afraid of getting in front of people. I don't have a lot of confidence when it comes to an actual singing voice. So most of my songs become shouting and repeat after me's and that sort of thing. But it's a good kind of campy CD for people to learn some good camp songs from to kind of expand their boundaries with.
Very cool. The last two times I was at the Tri-State Conference, Lisa was there and performed for us. So it's nice to know that she has such a great and strong camp connection.
Yeah. It's funny to put on a car ride with people that aren't camp friendly though, or don't know about camp that well, and put that CD on. They definitely turn and look at you like, "What are you listening to?" But yeah.
Joe, what have you got?
I have something called the Wild Apricot blog. It's when you're online, and I use X Marks to track all of my bookmarks, so it's the same across all my computers. And so I'll bookmark something, and then like 2 or 3 months later, I'll be like, what is that? And Wild Apricot blog is essentially a nonprofit technology blog, which will help you with various things about technology. And for a non-for-profit, especially a camp, there's lots of things. It was great. The article that went up yesterday or the day before is the fact that is your nonprofit tax status at risk? This has nothing to do with Canadian camps. This has to do with American camps, that there was some law passed in 2006, and now if you haven't filed, they're going to revoke your nonprofit tax status this year if you haven't filed any returns over the past 3 years as a nonprofit. So it gives you up-to-date information. I have no idea. There's a whole Wild Apricot's a software program. I have no idea what it is, but they had a great topic, and it was funny that that Gabe talked about it earlier. Blog topics. They have a nonprofit blog topics ideas for the year. So it was a great. It's a great resource to go to. The initial thing that I had bookmarked it, and the reason I bookmarked it and use it as a tool is because they had 21 free webinars for nonprofits, and that was posted in November. So you could sign up for webinars every day of the month.
Very cool.
I think I followed the author of this blog on Twitter as well, too, and her tweets are great.
Who is that, Dan?
I'm trying to figure out right now, because her photo is in the bottom of the one post, and I'm like, that's definitely...
Rebecca Lehman is her name on this post, so...
Great.
But yeah.
Gabe, what's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week is a site called Trumpia, and what it is, it's a system of text, IM, social networking, and email alerts. And you can create and manage multiple accounts. You can have one for staff, one for parents, one for alumni, one for campers, and you can select an account and type in your message. And it can be delivered in a number of different formats. It can be sent via text message, an IM, a post on their Facebook or Twitter account, and just a regular email. And you can send these messages from your phone or from your computer. People can write you back, and the message will go into a special Trumpia inbox. And you can also automate messages. So you could create a message to be sent out in 2 weeks, and if you're on vacation, it'll be sent out automatically without you having to do anything.
That's very cool. And so you're using it?
Yeah, we use it with our staff mainly. We find that with our staff, either a Facebook post or a text message is actually the best way of communicating with them.
Right. How many staff do you have at Birch Trail?
About 120 staff and about 200 campers.
Right. So is there a cost involved with Trumpia?
There is, and it depends, again, how many types of the formats you're going to be using. You know, if you're sending out a text message, an email, an IM, and a Facebook and a Twitter post, it's obviously going to increase the cost. But they're fairly manageable, provided that you're not sending something out every single day to 200 people.
Well, you wouldn't want that anyway, because you wouldn't want your staff hating you.
No, especially right before the summer.
Yeah. I am writing exams. Back off. Great. Thank you for that, Gabe. My pick of the week is probably the most expensive picky to date, but it is a great tool, and I love it. And my pick is the Bobcat. That's the Bobcat Tractor Company. A Bobcat Toolcat. And we bought one used, and we paid $30,000 Canadian. So I think that was about half price. But it was such a great, has been such a great machine for us because it does so many things. We had, for us, it replaced a lawn tractor. We were looking at buying a gator, so we didn't have to buy a gator for moving equipment around. And we can do a whole bunch of stuff with it. So like all Bobcats, you use the Bobtach system and you can buy all these different attachments for it. And that's what makes Bobcats great, because they all just sort of fit in. And it's basically, imagine a gator with an air-conditioned cab and a front-end loader on it. And the back end has a hydraulic dump box. So it's a two-seater with a loader on the front, and you can take that loader off and put on all sorts of different attachments. So at Cairn, they have a grapple attachment for moving brush and a hydraulically powered mower deck that's, I think, 7 feet wide. So you can cut the grass. I mean, Cairn is in the bush, but there's one big field and then little patches of grass all around. And on a riding lawnmower, it would take you 2 days to cut grass. I know, Joe, I have nothing on the amount of grass that you have. But anyway, this machine is awesome. And we have one sort of, at Cairn, there's one residential camp program, quite traditional. And then off in the bush, there is a wilderness program, the Iona program. And the tractor goes back and forth moving food and garbage in and out of Iona a couple times a day, plus whatever jobs it's being used for by the maintenance staff. So Bobcat Toolcat, I can't recommend it enough. The Bobtach attachments have snow blowers and street sweepers and all sorts of things. Stump grinders. Be a fun tool, I think. So there you go. That's my pick.
Our maintenance staff loves ours.
Yeah, you have a Toolcat too?
I've seen a snow plow on it. I've seen them cut grass with it. They've definitely used it every single day.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think ours at Cairn ever sat still. There you go.
Awesome.
Joe, I make the reference about Joe cutting.
I'm going to sign off.
Yeah. Great. Joe, thank you so much.
Perfect. Have a good one, Joe.
Okay, bye, Joe.
Bye. Nice meeting you, Gabe.
Nice to meet you, Joe.
I make a joke about Joe and grass cutting because I think they have 40 or 50 acres of grass to cut at his camp. And it's somebody's job 2 days a week to cut grass. Wonderful. So thanks for everything today, guys. Actually, I did want to highlight something that Gab put up as her pick of the week. And I dragged this on and didn't get to talk to Joe about this. For camps in Ontario, there was a big fundraiser last Friday night that was for a charity in Ontario called Kids in Camp, which all accredited camps in Ontario can use to help bring kids in who can't afford to come to camp. And I wanted to get a bit of a report from Joe on how that went. But Gab's pick was, I'll put it in the show notes, but it was an article from a really famous Toronto broadcaster who was the host of the night on last Friday. And he talks about how camp changed his life and made him into a broadcaster. So it's a cool article if you have time to read that as well. Wonderful. Thank you, fellas, for being here. Why don't you just take a minute and remind everyone where they can find out about your camp and about you. And we'll start off with Dan.
So I work at Frost Valley YMCA, which is at frostvalley.org. And then I also blog at danlovescamp.com, as well as for Camp Nation. And then I also Twitter at the same address, which is danlovescamp.
Great. Gabe, how can we find you?
You can find my camp, Birch Trail Camp, at our website, www.birchtrail.com, and some more camp at somemorecamp.com, SMORECAMP.com. And you can find me by picking up the phone and calling me or sending me an email at gabe@birchtrail.com.
Wonderful. Thanks. I'm twittering professionally at twitter.com/ourkidsnet, and my personal Twitter is twitter.com/Zoic. And I'm also blogging, actually a bit less than Dan, as it turns out, at campnation.ca. And I write more geared towards parents at ourkids.net/blog. So thanks, fellas. It's good to be here. I'm so glad that you're here. I want to say just a couple more words before I get you to say goodbye. We, as we've said on every podcast for the last little while, have a contest on our Facebook page at facebook.com/ourkidsgotocamp. And we are starting to get more and more entries for that contest. It's really put out there to highlight the talents of the staff at your camp. And so it's a music contest. The person who wins it will win a complete home recording setup with a USB mic and a Toshiba laptop. And we have some other Toshiba prizes as well. And some camps have asked, and we've decided that yes, the camp could win if you have your spring stuff down and record a song as a group before the 31st of May. If you get the most votes, then your camp would win the first prize. So we are also offering a quarter page advertisement in our Kids Go to Camp magazine, which is not just focused on camps in Ontario. It's certainly camps across Canada more and more, and lots of northern states. So if you're interested in pulling people in from the Canadian market, it's nice. I think that quarter page ad is pretty great. I think that's it. Fellas, I'm glad to meet up with you on Skype today.
Thanks very much for having me, Travis. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was great to have you here, Gabe. So I hope we can get you back again.
No problem. I'm always available.
Good.
Dan, it was great to meet you.
Yeah, it was great meeting you too.
Thanks, Dan. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, definitely. It was a great episode.
Good. And thanks to our listeners. We appreciate you downloading the Camp Nation podcast. And just a reminder that you can find our show notes on campnation.ca. So take care of each other.
This Camp Nation podcast was brought to you by Our Kids Go to Camp magazine and the camps.ca online summer camp directory. Thanks for listening.